I'm author and athlete Brad Kearns. Welcome to the Be Rad Podcast, where we explore ways to pursue peak performance with passion throughout life. Visit bradkearns.com for great resources on healthy eating, exercise, and lifestyle. And here we go with the show.
From that conversation, my takeaway was no vegetable oils, you know, limiting that in my diet, or canola oil and all of that, using butter, avocado oil, coconut oil. That was my immediate takeaway.
I really like to back up the conversation to say, look, if you just can eliminate processed foods, that's going to be your biggest win by far.
You don't have to be lifting 50-pound weights or whatever, you know. It's just getting out there, moving. On the daily, if you can, I think, because that's what we were doing back in the day, right? Walking wherever we were going and lifting heavy things.
Hey, man, how's your sexual function? Oh, uncomfortable talking about it? Look, we talk about our injured knees, our belly fat, so it's time to get focused on function. I want to tell you about Gainswave. This is a cutting-edge protocol where a handheld device sends low-intensity shock waves into your penile blood vessels to stimulate a healing response and promote increased blood circulation and the growth of new blood vessels. A skilled practitioner puts the Gainswave magic wand onto your magic wand, and after a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective, you get real results. Gainswave reports an 80% success rate. Now, we know that popping pills is a popular penile protocol, but when you're working with clogged pipes, you just get a temporary band-aid effect when you take prescription drugs. Gainswave addresses the cause of age-related decline by stimulating growth factors and activating dormant stem cells. Translation: stronger, harder, more sustainable erections. I learned about Gainswave from my podcast guest, Dr. Judson Brandeis, at the Brandeis MD Clinic in Northern California, and there's a robust network of Gainswave providers that you can find on their website near you. Complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, and while it's great for ED, Gainswave is for any man that wants to combat the effects of aging and get a little boost for your A-game. So please visit Gainswave.com/Brad. That's Gainswave.com/Brad to find a practitioner in your area, and you can take advantage of my special promotion. Buy 6 treatments and get one free. You have nothing to lose and lots to gain from Gainswave.com/Brad. Greetings, everyone, from vacation hotel room. And yes, Mia Moore is going to be brought into the show. It's been a long time since we've had you on. Welcome back, Mia Moore.
Finally, you're welcome.
Yes, that's right. We've been talking about doing some follow-up podcasts for a while. We're going to do one on relationship insights. But this one, the idea came from a ton of requests that we've received from people over the years, where one person is super into the ancestral health scene and read our book and is attending our retreat. And then they'll come up and ask Mark or I, hey, can you give me some tips about getting my girlfriend into primal eating too? And Mark's favorite answer is, No, you can't. You can't do it.
Because you sure couldn't do that with me. You couldn't get me to eat primal paleo. Because it's something with any type of diet, if you want to call it diet, the person needs to be ready to do it. And it has to come from them. So when you've got, you know, parents telling their teenage daughter that she needs to lose weight, for example, or a spouse, which is worse, telling their wife the same thing. I mean, usually saying, do you really want to eat that? You know, it comes across
going
that
sideways
way.
Around, you know, what do you call it? Like an indirect little, not even facing it straight on, which would be a little tough to take, but at least the person speaking straight on.
Right.
Instead, you're saying like, I'm so glad I stopped eating cupcakes, you know, stuff like that.
Right. Oh, let's go for a walk after eating that piece of cheesecake. And wink, wink. But anyway, but I've always said, you know, you have to be The person has to be ready, willing to do so, and able, because let's not forget, there's always that fine print. You need to check with your doctor first, right? And I think people tend to forget about that aspect. Although that could lead to another show where you yourself don't always agree or don't feel that the doctors are up to date or current with, you know, how to eat healthy, what's healthy, what's not. I mean, that could be a different story, a different show altogether. No,
we'll be hitting that in this show. Don't worry. Okay. Because you've described a really delicate tight rope that I personally have to walk, because I'm total immersion into healthy living, diet, lifestyle, exercise, training, fitness. However, you're wasting your breath until someone is ready to receive the information. Not to mention change and actually do it, but just to even have a conversation. So when I try to dominate the chit chat at a gathering when people aren't even interested, that's a waste of breath. And then if you detect someone's interested, or they have, you know, sincerely asking me a question about the latest book I'm working on, I will jump into that mode really quickly. But then you have to be careful from getting this big hammer and just hammering in your point of view that is the only way and everyone else is wrong. And I think we're subjected to that now with social media, with easy dispensation of information, podcasts, YouTube, where it's getting overboard and it's getting to be a little bit off-putting that so many people are expert and voicing their opinion so strongly and shoving it down your throat.
Right. Well, let's go back to like when I first learned about the paleo diet was that day when I met you on the Southwest airplane heading down to Burbank. And we're talking about what we do for a living or what have you. It's just pleasant chit chat that you do on the plane with the person sitting next to you. And you mentioned the paleo diet or primal. And I said, what's that? Because I hadn't heard of that. And you kind of started, you know, talk to me about it, send me some links, follow-up links. And I started slowly reading into it. And I took away a few things from it because I really wasn't willing to or ready to convert my whole, you know, eating habit. But little things, I think that's how the best way to approach things, the little takeaways from that conversation. Mm-hmm. My takeaway was no vegetable oils, you know, limiting that in my diet, or canola oil and all of that, using butter, avocado oil, coconut oil. That was my immediate takeaway. I'd already been doing other things. I had a son who was working out and meal planning and, you know, eating healthy. So we had already eliminated, you know, all sodas from the household, and eating, you know, just cleanly, you could, you know, sort of speak, vegetables, chicken, you know, meat. But so that conversation was getting rid of all those, what do you call them? I'm not.
Yeah, the processed foods, I guess.
The vegetable oils and all that stuff.
Industrial seed oils, vegetable oils. That's a good takeaway, because that is the number one thing, right? Especially if you have a quick interaction with somebody. If they can take away that, that's the number one change anyone can make in their diet, is to eliminate those.
Right. And that's the first thing I did. Then later on, slowly, was sugar. Did I eliminate it in my diet? No, because I can't. I mean, I just love sugar. What can I say, right? But I can reduce the sugar intake in my diet easily. I mean, I had reduced it before by not having sodas. I drink a lot of iced tea, unsweetened, you know, that type of thing. But if there's a cheesecake put in front of me, I'm going to probably eat it. Ice cream, why not? But again, that goes back to eating everything in moderation, which I don't know if you and I agree with that. You used to talk about, I don't think you were a big fan of that, because that's sometimes what doctors tell you. They'll say, oh, you know, your cholesterol level's high, but, you know, just, you know, limit this, that, or the other, or just eat it in moderation. Sometimes I think I would hear you say, don't eat it at all.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope when we traffic in these notions of allowing an indulgence here, an indulgence there, or even verbalizing that phrase, everything in moderation, starts to get me off now, because the baseline is so disastrous and we have so much influence toward unhealthy eating, consuming processed foods driven by marketing forces, and engaging in all kinds of other unhealthy behaviors. And so if we walk around saying, hey, everything in moderation, we're talking about an average human who is the fattest, sickest in the history of humanity, history of recorded history. And so I believe that we need an extreme approach to healthy living just to counterbalance all of the disasters that are in our path everywhere we go and every restaurant we sit down to, whether it's fast food, whether it's shopping at the grocery store, fine dining, medium chain dining, we're looking at an onslaught of health objection foods. And so if you don't educate yourself well and don't think about it constantly, you're going to drift pretty far down. And then if you start to use the everything in moderation playing card, then you're going to drift below the midway point, and we're going to be into the path of disease and demise. And we have the stats on type 2 diabetes growing at such an accelerated rate that it's going to overwhelm Western society in the decades ahead. Dr. Doug McGuff, in his book Primal Prescription, cites research that it'll bankrupt the United States Treasury. Caring for type 2 diabetics alone will destroy the healthcare system as well as the entire government due to the cost of caring for people.
Right. And you know what you're saying about the processed food, to me the biggest, I noticed, I'm speaking for myself here because I'm not one that can speak about other people for other people, but for myself, eliminating fast food, because I used to eat a lot of it either as a kid or traveling for work for years. It was pretty easy when you arrive late to a city to grab a whatever, Carl's Jr. chicken sandwich. And then later in life, not eating as much as that, because there's no need for that, I noticed a change. I mean, as far as, weight and all that, just by not eating fast food, whether it's salt, I don't know what it is. It just, or eating cleanly. Like I said, I have a friend who, or you had mentioned a friend who does the Scarsdale diet for years and would mention it to me. And I never did it because I just really wasn't ready, because it's very regimented as far as what you can eat for the first 2 weeks. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But one day I just thought, I'm just going to do it. I was ready to do it. And I know in 2 weeks, I mean, they say you can lose a pound a day. I lost, I think, 10 pounds in 2 weeks. Plus, I was also, kicking up my exercising, doing it daily rather than, a few times a week. And so in those 2 weeks, I'm not eating anything from, bought at some, didn't go out to a restaurant, just at home.
Right. You stuck to it like glue. It was incredible, really, because right. I don't think too many people can make that type of commitment to eat exactly what's stated there. But the mere act of doing that was tremendous because you were locked in.
Right. It was easy. I didn't have to think about it. I knew every morning was going to be half a grapefruit and a piece of, he calls it protein bread, but I just did wheat toast with low sugar or no sugar in it. I looked at the ingredients every morning. Didn't have to think about that. And usually I didn't eat breakfast. Remember, I would never eat breakfast. My first meal was always, noon or one sometimes. But for these 2 weeks, I did this, I followed it to the T. My lunch, you have a choice of things to eat, or you can have a cup of cottage cheese with some fruit, blueberries, blackberries, and 3 or 4 pecans. It was very limited, but so I would cut it in little pieces to get a crunch on in every bite. But that's what I did. And my dinner was, you have to choose. One day he has chicken or fish, and then as many vegetables as you want, which I know that you're not into vegetables anymore, but so I would have my veggies.
You could be doing worse than following this regimented diet that
and
kept you in complete regulation. And I think that was the biggest insight for me watching, was like anyone who takes a step away from unfettered access to indulgent foods is going to have a huge health awakening. Right. And I think that's where we get these people saying how great the whole food plant-based is, because they have their kale smoothies and their salads and their lentil soup and they feel fantastic. And in comparison to stopping off at Carl's Jr. and having donuts in the morning and, just bombing yourself with processed foods for years and decades, it's going to feel great to make any change, even one that I would categorize as high risk, like a whole food plant-based. But the Scarsdale diet, for people who don't know, back in, I think it was the 70s,
78.
It was a best-selling book, and it was the thing for a while. And here it is, dusted off with great success by a couple enthusiasts.
Right. And the good thing about that, you only do it for 2 weeks. And then you're off it for 2 weeks. If you need to lose more weight, you do it for another 2 weeks. But I did it for 2 weeks, felt great. A month or two later, I may do it for a week or so if I feel I need a kick in the pants or what have you. But it worked for me. And so part of what you and I have always talked about is, you know, yeah, there's primal, paleo, carnivore diet. There's all these different diets around. And I think there's not one diet for everyone. Everyone has to find what works for them, which I've always told people. But anyway.
Well, I mean, the more sophisticated the discussion gets, it seems like a lot of people are landing on that insight that there's a lot of personalization that is necessary. And so it's a big vote for having the courage to experiment for a month and see what happens. And if you're suffering from nagging autoimmune and inflammatory conditions and digestive disturbances, and nothing's done well with, you know, traditional treatment, medication, or just that you've been hanging with this stuff for years and decades, a 30-day restriction diet, the carnivore being the best and easiest one to follow, that it eliminates all those plant toxins. There's thousands and thousands of people reporting amazing health turnarounds. Now, should they stay on that forever? Or should anyone, you know, think that's the end all? Of course not. But if you got troubles, the first thing to do is eliminate processed foods. Then you're going to feel fantastic. And then we have these additional tiers. But I'm getting frustrated with all the kind of hair splitting that's going on as we deeply immerse into this. And so I really like to back up the conversation to say, look, if you just can eliminate processed foods, that's going to be your biggest win by far. I had Dr. Robert Lustig on the show, author of Metabolical, The Hacking of the American Mind, many other best-selling books, regarded as one of the world's leading anti-sugar crusaders. And he said, backed by great research and his career reputation, he said, if you simply eliminate processed foods, you can't get fat. You can't become obese. You can't get metabolic syndrome, because our body does a wonderful job regulating our caloric intake of nutritious, wholesome foods. And anyone can relate here, because you don't go to the omelet bar and have too many omelets and then be patting your stomach and feeling terrible. You just, it's really difficult to eat too many steaks and walk away feeling bad, as opposed to, oh, I just finished another pint of ice cream after my long, busy, stressful day where I didn't really nourish myself well. Those are the foods that are easy to overeat and get stuck in that spiral of needing more and more of them, because your body is not processing energy right, very efficiently.
And the least, the less you eat of those, the more guilty you feel when you do eat a piece of cake or whatever. I know I do, because I'm not eating as much as that.
Saying, like, now that you've cleaned up your diet, let's say, you notice that you're making a departure rather than just like, sure, I'll reach
right,
for anything.
It's like, okay,
I got you.
Yeah. Well, it's my birthday month, so I can, you know, that's the excuse when it's my birthday month.
And interestingly, you seem to weather whatever treat, like, you don't notice any adverse effects, where I sometimes feel like crashed and burned if I do go and hit the ice cream really hard when we're going out to one of the gourmet ice cream shops. I kind of feel like, oh boy, but you seem to have no problem.
No, probably because I eat more of it than you do.
Well, again, there's that personalization. And if we tested your genetics and the number of amylase genes, you have 23 and I have 7 or something.
Right.
We're making that up. But like, some people can handle a high carbohydrate intake more than others.
Right. But something else I'm going to go back to when I was doing that Scarsdale diet, it was more than just the food. It was also like my day change during those 2 weeks. I'm one that always stays up late. And what happens when you stay up late? You get the munchies. And at that point, you're not going to cook something healthy. Mm. You're going to reach into the cupboard and see what's there, right? I know some people say they eat cereal, right? Because it's easy. Someone may take a scoop of the ice cream that's in the fridge. You never know. Or beef jerky, which is what I've done sometimes because it's there. Just your munching. Or popcorn, our favorite, with lemon olive oil instead of butter. But still, so I would stay up. I stay up late and I'm munching. That also adds calories to you, and you're not burning those calories. So with this diet that I was doing, I'm eating that breakfast, you know, after my workout in the morning, that, you know, little breakfast. Then I have my lunch, and then dinner was because you're not eating a lot, so you're hungry earlier. So I was eating dinner at 5. Again, normally we eat dinner at what, 6 or 7, mm-hmm. which is why I stay up late. So I was finding myself going to bed earlier during those 2 weeks and actually getting more sleep as well. So, and working out every day. So it's that whole cycle, my whole day changed. And I think that made a difference. And I think that makes a difference when we kind of go the other direction, because we're staying up late, we're eating junk food late, we're not working out as much, or whatever it is.
Yeah, there's tons of research suggesting that eating after dark is adverse to your digestive circadian rhythm, which is so tied into your circadian rhythm overall. I'm not sure I'm highly sensitive to that one. Like, I don't have any problem eating a meal after dark, or even closer to bed than is recommended. Right.
That's you.
Right.
With me, I found that it does make a difference.
Well, I mean,
everyone's different.
Yeah. If you're getting up past your bedtime, you're going to kick into sort of an alternative energy source, which is cortisol, the stress hormone that's supposed to be dropping as you make the environment dark and you wind things down, close down your screens, all those things. But if you spike cortisol by staying up late, by getting the stimulation from a screen and from artificial light, that's going to prompt sugar cravings and quick energy, because we're not, you know, tapping into our natural energy sources, which are governed by exposure to sunlight and those wonderful hormone balances that occur first thing in the morning. We're supposed to wind everything down. So it's sort of like an override. So you're jumping into, you're pulling over into the gas station to get another fuel source for the last hour. And yeah, that's a good point you make, that it's available and easy. And also,
but that's because it's in your pantry. I guess if it wasn't purchased in my household, I wouldn't have it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the research on this, but maybe it's that we really want sugar at those times and the quick, easy to digest stuff, rather than, is making some scrambled eggs as appealing at 10:30 at night as popcorn? Probably not.
It is for my son. My oldest, I'll find him at 10:30 at night making scrambled eggs after his hour.
He's got many more hours of gaming, so that's kind of, he needs some nutritious food. Okay, so we have sort of a nice overview and status report where the couple has obviously been discussing these things and living out our healthy lifestyle dreams over the last 5-6 years, right? And I think maybe with this show, maybe I can, we can kind of role play here where I take you a little deeper into the wonderful immersion of ancestral health principles, and then you could see sort of how that flies with your own personal experience coming from, your background of having an interest in healthy living, healthy eating, but now having to, especially as you alluded to a couple times earlier in the show, you're having to embrace this radical new information that I walked through the door with one day, where you said, yeah, now I guess you're not so into vegetables, all that kind of fun stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think as we sort through, let's say, the best-selling diet books of the last 5 decades and what the trends and patterns have been, there's some pretty interesting trends that we really should educate ourselves about and understand where things are at. And one of them is this toppling of conventional wisdom that has occurred at an accelerated rate over the last 20 years with the rise of the internet and the ancestral health movement and so forth. But now what's coming to appear is that the U.S. government dietary recommendations, which, by the way, have been exported across the world to all other countries. You know, we came up with this flawed science and questionable research and come out with the food pyramid back in the 90s and numerous iterations of it. And we're now realizing that the standard Western diet has been a widespread dismal failure, resulting in the fattest, sickest population in the history of humanity. And some of the highlights there have been the introduction of processed foods and the heavy promotion of these processed foods as actually healthy and superior to some of the centerpiece foods of human evolution. And amazingly, a lot of this information holds strong today, even as the research and the groundswell of information and success stories and failure stories have come about. But you still will go to the doctor and they'll say, hey, you should cut back on your eggs because your LDL cholesterol, quote unquote, bad cholesterol, is looking a little high. And some of these notions are about 40 or 50 years flawed and dated from what the news was back in the 60s and 70s.
I mean, like, who made cereal the thing to eat in the mornings? I mean, to me, that's like the grossest thing, cereal.
Oh, boy.
You look at the ingredients.
You just set me up for a good one there, because Kellogg was this evangelical health freak, and he invented cereal as a way of quelling the desire to masturbate in young youth that he wanted to indoctrinate into his religious values. And that is no joke. That's why cereal was invented, because he knew that stuffing the human with this processed food would diminish libido. So that's kind of a funny start to the cereal lifestyle. But what we have today are these multinational giant companies spending billions of advertising dollars, starting when we were little kids watching cartoons in the morning. And Dr. Lessig talked about this a little, where the tobacco companies started to see the writing on the wall in the 60s when they were getting shut down because people were dying. And so they started gobbling up food companies and using the same advertising strategies to create lifelong consumers of the processed food, the high profit, nutrient deficient processed food. And now we have companies like RJR Nabisco. RJR is R.J. Reynolds, one of the great tobacco companies, the giants, where they, you know, merged and bought up all the brands.
Philip Morris Craft. I remember I audited them back in the day. They're Philip Morris, right?
So we got wise to cigarettes. It's been great to see in our lifetimes the decline in smoking. I remember being a little kid and I, for some reason, just hated smoking and hated cigarette smoke. And now it's great to live in a world where it's, you know, largely diminished and is, you know, now getting exported to the third world countries that, you know, aren't as sophisticated as to the health risks. But here we are still succumbing to a massive onslaught of advertising and flawed science and flawed government information. And then even the pillars of education, for example, like today when you go and get a degree in dietary science, nutrition, your certification, are largely aligned with the government policies, the USRDA dietary recommendations. And
right, but let's go back there, because I know you have your food pyramid and there's the U.S. food pyramid. I don't think the problem's with the food pyramid, really. I think it's the food that people are eating that are not really within the food pyramid. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the biggest problem is you're not even on the pyramid.
Right.
But the pyramid itself is a disaster as well, because it's recommending that you have grains as the centerpiece of your diet. And these are high-calorie, nutrient-deficient processed foods, whether they're whole grains or refined grains, they really have no place in the diet. And that's where the big fork in the road occurs with ancestral health movement and Mark Sisson, Primal Blueprint, the early leaders, Rob Wolf. And if we go back with proper credit, there was a researcher named Boyd Eaton in 1988 put out a paper showing the dietary practices of hunter-gatherer ancestors. And Weston A. Price did it back 100 years ago. He traveled around the world studying indigenous populations and saw that they consumed things like organ meats, and they didn't have, of course, any processed foods 100 years ago. And they were super healthy compared to civilized humans that were eating flour and sugar and making bread and living in modern times. So this ancestral health movement then, you know, really took off in the early 2000s. And the big takeaway, to make a short story, was that we eliminated the foods that occurred after civilization. So we're talking about a Paleolithic eating experience, and the familiar list of foods that humans evolved for 2.5 million years were meat, fish, fowl, eggs, vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds. And by the way, they also ate a lot of insects. And largely noticeably missing from that list were the grains that were the centerpiece of the advent of civilization. That's why we were able to become civilized, is we started to cultivate corn, wheat, and rice across the globe. Then we could grow crops, live in one space, advance society, and also get much less healthy, because these calories were going in that were not hunter-gatherer fare, which are vastly more nutrient-dense. And so a grain-based diet has been really the biggest disaster, and also including the refined industrial seed oils as we went away from natural fats that we used to cook with and eat.
And remind me again the bad thing about grains.
Well, they're high calorie, high carbohydrate, very little nutrition in comparison to a steak, an egg, a sardine, a salmon, you know, the true nutrient-dense foods of the earth, fruits. And so basically we're filling up our mouths with a lot of calories that don't do much for us besides overwhelm the delicate system of insulin production, because we're not used to, as humans, we're not used to ingesting 100, 200 grams, 300, 500 grams of carbohydrates in a day.
Okay, but what if there are all these other countries that rice is a staple in their, you know, their diet. They're not obese. You don't have a lot of obesity there. Is it, they're more active probably out walking and, you know, working the fields, whatever. Is that the difference? You know what?
Yeah, very good question. It's really what we get into these days are the back and forth about people citing an attribute of the Mediterranean diet or the traditional Japanese diet. And look how long they live and look how much healthier they are. And so we can pick and choose all kinds of positive attributes and negative attributes of any civilized, you know, no one's perfect. Even the longest lived humans in the secret pocket of the Blue Zones, which is a popular book and lifestyle movement where they went and found areas where there was a lot of people living to 100. And it's been, you know, widely criticized and discredited by people that that object to it. And then it's been widely touted as like the greatest thing. And this, you know, this whole industry has been built around the Blue Zones. And I like to look for common ground so we don't just argue all day long and realize that people who live to be 100, they're doing a lot of things right. One of them is picking the right parents, because it's now known that there's a lot of people that can live to 100. I'm sidetracking for a moment, but it's interesting to note there's like 500,000 people alive today around the world that are over 100.
Wow.
However, how many people live to be 110? Very, very few. It's like there's 17 or something right now. So there's a 500,000 live to 100. 110 ain't happening. And with the research on the super centenarians, it's called 110 plus, the genetic attributes are so profound that it's almost like you're not going to get there unless you have the genes and all these awesome lifestyle habits. Of course, there's probably a lot of people that have super centenarian genes that live to be 73 because they smoked and did whatever.
There's the French lady. Didn't she smoke?
Jeanne Calment. Yeah, yes. She smoked. She quit smoking when she was like 115 or something like that. Like she finally quit. Anyway, back to the...
Well, no, I'm going to talk about my grandma too. My great-grandmother lived to be over 100, and she had a shot of some hard alcohol every night, and that's what she attributed her long life to.
So a great-grandmother living to be over 100 is a stunning performance, because I said today there's a 500,000 centenarian 2022, but if this great-grandma was living in the coming into the 20th century and that's it, like when did she die around?
I'd have to ask my dad.
So is it in the 18s and 19s then, if she's your great grandma? That's incredible, because back then, yeah, maybe she was one of the few around, sure. So the what I was saying before I got excited about the 100-year-old people was, so we're looking at all the attributes of different diets and different cultures and trying to get these common ground. I think clearly the lack of processed foods gives you a fighting chance to have a long, healthy, happy, productive life. And so anyone who's consuming these modern foods that have accelerated in their offerings in the last 30, 40, 50 years, that's a disaster. You're just slashing your lifespan every single day that you pull into Carl's Jr. or Ben & Jerry's pints or the potato chips and the stuff that's going in. I'm so excited to introduce you to Paluva. This is a new zero-drop minimalist shoe with the distinctive five-toe design from my main man, Mark Sisson. Paluvas give you the most authentic barefoot-style experience, but with sufficient cushioning so you can use them for all manner of daily movement, especially walking and many other fitness and athletic activities. Paluvas are also incredibly stylish, so you get a barefoot shoe that you're not embarrassed to wear around in daily life. It's been so cool to see the popularity of minimalist shoes grow over the recent years, but Paluvas are a step ahead of every other zero-drop wide-box shoe because of the critical feature of individual five-toe articulation, a separate slot for each of your toes. This allows for correct dynamic movement of the foot through the walking or running stride, which is impossible when your toes are encased into a single box, even a wide box. Well, you might know that minimalist shoes have faced controversy in recent years for causing injuries from inappropriate use. So here is the big picture mission. We want to get you walking in pullovers, living in your pullovers, going barefoot in your home or other safe areas as often as possible. Go ahead and use your specialized cushiony running shoes or your basketball shoes, work boots, high heels, things that you want to wear when you want to wear them, but wear your pullovers as much as possible to reawaken the natural functionality of the human foot to stand, walk, run, and perform. Do you want to try a pair? I'm certain that when you put them on and walk around, you are going to quickly realize that these are the most comfortable natural shoes that you've ever worn. They are designed to feel like you're, quote, walking barefoot on a putting green. Please visit Pelluva.com, that's P-E-L-U-V-A, and use the code BRADPODCAST and get 10% off your first pair. Pelluvas, let your feet be feet. So, you know, we're past the point of like optimal longevity potential because we have way more processed foods than our parents even and our grandparents. So that's the first note. And the second one is because you asked about the presence of grains and how they're a big staple in civilized society across the world, and they have been for 10,000 years. So again, this is how civilization started, was the ability to grow wheat, rice, and corn. And so we don't want to go back to hunter-gatherer times where we're all going around looking for food for 5 or 6 hours every day. That's what the Hadza in Tanzania are doing right now and the other primitive populations around the globe. They're super healthy. They have amazing statistics, but they're also having to get up and look for food all day. So assuming we want to exist wonderfully in modern life and enjoy our lives the way we are, looking to an ancestral diet has become very popular for a lot of reasons. One of them is that the food is more nutritious and it's more aligned with our human genetic expectations for health. So like in the Primal Blueprint, where we had to initially present this very controversial and difficult to sell story, we're talking about how we evolved as Homo sapiens, and before that, Homo erectus. So we've been around for millions of years eating these kinds of foods: meat, fish, fowl, eggs, vegetables, fruits, nuts, and seeds. If you look at that list and calculate what carb level is in that list, it's by comparison to today, a very low carbohydrate diet. You get plenty of carbs from fruits and vegetables and so forth, but by comparison to having grains being a centerpiece of all meals all day long around the world, that's a big shift, and it's getting us back closer to our human genetic expectations for health, which are not to slam orange juice, toast, oatmeal with brown sugar on top, and all those things that we've come to see as routine.
Okay.
So as you can tell, listeners, I'm trying to sell the story, and that's what the fun of the show that I thought would be. You know, how does that fly to you? And that ancestral example of eating, I think, is it's the centerpiece of the movement. So it's a pretty important thing to grasp, especially when, you know, I wasn't really aware of, you know, evolutionary anthropology to the extent where, you know, we had this big fork in the road. What's his name? Jared Diamond, Nobel Prize winning UCLA professor, best-selling author. He said it was the greatest shift in the history of humanity, was the shift away from hunter-gatherer lifestyle to civilized lifestyle. And with that was the greatest shift in dietary practices in the history of humanity too. And we're having a difficult time dealing with it based on the, you know, global statistics of you know, obesity and those population
right.
statistics.
And then a shift in activity level too, I would think, from yeah. hunter-gatherers to
so
civilization.
So if you look at this ancestral health movement, and we'll talk on the other aspects like diet, sleep, circadian rhythm, we've talked a little bit, but we're talking about getting back to the original, you know, human healthy lifestyle, and of course making all the adaptations into modern life because we're not living in caves anymore. So instead, we hear a show from a sleep expert saying we want to have your room temperature down between 60 and 68 Fahrenheit because we're meant to sleep in a cool environment. That's how the body gets to sleep and stays asleep. So all these cool little tips and tricks to become more ancestral. Hey, jump in the cold water. I have a chest freezer in our yard. Or I jump in the lake. I'm the only person in the lake in the winter. that's also an ode to how our ancestors dealt with a lot of temperature stress and became strong and resilient accordingly by dealing with long, dark, cold winters and learning how to burn body fat more efficiently. So that's what we're doing with these adaptations and little tricks. A lot of people call them biohacking and so forth.
Like the mattresses.
Right, the temperature-controlled 8-sleep mattress, which we're excitedly getting started on. But on the important point of diet, it's pretty difficult to dispute that if you go looking for the natural foods of the earth in the plant kingdom and the animal kingdom, you are going to be on a healthy path. Because we've made it this far, 2.5 million years, consuming a lot of animals and a lot of different plants as well. People who are objecting to our egg consumption or consuming red meat because it's so unhealthy and it's going to clog your arteries and give you a heart attack are, I would say gracefully, nicely, you're kind of rejecting the evolutionary anthropology model, which is the longest and most severely scrutinized scientific study in history. So it's known, it's not disputed, it's known that we did eat a lot of meat and eggs and fish. And in fact, the access to this nutrient-rich food that's found in animal foods was what allowed us to grow a bigger and more complex brain and branch off on the family tree from our ape cousins. Today, the gorilla spends 11 hours a day consuming around 40 pounds of plant matter, chewing it and digesting the fiber and getting the what minimal nutrition it needs to fuel a brain that's a third of the human size. And so that's an illustrative example of how important and valuable it is for us to find the most nutritious foods to fuel the brain as well as the body.
You sold me right there with that statement.
With the gorilla? Yeah, why do we want to be like a gorilla? Come on. So here's where the problem occurs, I think, or the sticking point is the industrialization of our food supply today. And you can go watch a documentary of how nasty the animals are treated and all the crap that they feed the cows in today's feedlots and make a decision, oh my gosh, I'm never eating that garbage again. I'm just going to stick to kale smoothies, salads, and stir fry and be more healthy and be more sustainable and more clean. And the experts in the ancestral health realm will help you counter all those objections. Paul Saladino has great shows talking about regenerative agriculture, where the cows, when they're allowed to live in their natural habitat and their natural manner, they sequester carbon into the earth. So they're doing like a net positive for the greenhouse gas rather than this horrible, you know, that you hear about them farting and causing a huge problem for climate change and all that. And so I think we can reconcile the objections to eating animal foods by finding the very best sources of animal foods available today, the most sustainable, you would call
it. Pasture-raised eggs.
Yeah, there you go. So pasture-raised, that term implies that the chicken was out running around eating grass, eating worms, eating insects, and developing this egg that is way more nutritious than the chicken that's fed in the chicken coop who lives in a tiny little cage. They keep the lights on 24/7 so the chickens don't go to sleep because they can't sleep if it's light. And then they feed them hormones, pesticides, antibiotics, so they grow really big. The guys I just had on the podcast, Meat Mafia, they have a graphic on their Instagram where the size of the chicken in 1940s was like 2 pounds, and now it's 10 pounds.
Wow.
Because they stuff these up and they breed them genetically. And so it really is highly objectionable.
They sell them to Costco for rotisserie chicken.
Yeah, and people like those bigger ones because they look like they're getting more meat. And then you go to the farmer's market and you find a truly pasture-raised chicken from a local farmer, and it's tiny, and it's $17 instead of $5.95 at Costco. So there's some budget concerns. There's a lot of concerns about, speaking of sustainability, if everyone all of a sudden went to this ultimately highly sophisticated animal-based organic diet, we wouldn't be able to support,
right,
especially the population today at 7 billion. When our fathers were born, it was 2 billion, and now it's 7 billion. So we got all kinds of issues. But when it comes to scrutinizing your own diet and trying to be as healthy as possible, that's where we can try to focus in and say, let's find the most nutritious foods that are the easiest to digest, that don't cause problems, and they're minimally processed, minimally labeled, frozen, packaged, right, box wrapped, all that crap.
Well, I don't know if you're going to talk about this on this show, but I was really fascinated when you started talking about or interviewing folks also about who were carnivore, and the reason they went carnivore was to either there was an anti-inflammatory inflammatory reason, or the people that had certain autoimmune diseases. I found that pretty fascinating.
Me too, because I was hit with these insights in 2019. So I feel like I was really on this ancestral health kick for many years since hooking up with Sisson in 2008. And prior to that, I was saying, kind of like you described at the outset of the show, like, oh, I was very health conscious since I was 18 years old. As far as diet, I read all the books. I tried to get the best whole wheat bread and whole wheat pasta and stay away from the Wonder Bread and find the peanut butter that didn't have the processed oils in there. But I was eating what would probably be called a high-carbohydrate grain-based diet. Had my giant bowl of cereal in the morning, but guess what cereal was in there? It was the best natural granolas with no additives and the whole cooked oatmeal rather than the instant, bunch of fresh fruit on top, and all that sort of thing. And so switching over to eliminating all grains and kind of going into quote-unquote the low-carb category just by default, that was a huge transformation. And then when Dr. Paul Saladino came out and Dr. Sean Baker came out promoting this this meat-based diet or this carnivore diet, that was an eye-opener to hear about the potential concerns with the natural plant toxins that are contained in all plants, especially and most concentrated in the categories that we celebrate as the most nutritious. So the leafy greens, the cruciferous vegetables, this is where you can find higher levels of the natural poisons that your body can potentially react adversely to in the form of autoimmune and assorted inflammatory conditions, as well as digestive complaints like gas, bloating, transient digestive pain, problems with elimination, which are so common that I believe most people just think that they're normal and you're going to go through the month, let's say, or the year with some rough days where you're bloated, you're
When I met you.
Yeah.
And you were eating all these stir fries with cabbage and kale or
giant
all that
salad,
stuff.
Giant stir fries. Then I got going on my green smoothie from the viral YouTube video of Dr. Rhonda Patrick showing how she's stuffing in all this raw celery, spinach, kale, beets, and carrots. And so in raw form, the plant toxins are especially concerning because they haven't been treated, processed, and neutralized. And throughout history, what humans have done with plant material is prepare them so that they can be ingested without killing us. So if you think about olives or cashews or things like that, if you eat that raw, you'll die. It's very poisonous, right? So we have to soak, sprout, ferment, or cook many plant foods in order to render them not only more pleasant, but non-poisonous. And so we're on this spectrum now where if you're having a raw kale smoothie, you are indeed getting high levels of certain antioxidant compounds and the things that are touted, but you're also getting high levels of these poisons, which can cause autoimmune, inflammatory, and digestive problems. How do you know? Well, you can assess for symptoms, or you can do that elimination where if you cut out, and the idea would be to cut out all plant foods for 30 days and see how you perform, that'll be good indicators. And then when you're scrutinizing your plant intake, again, for the first time, because this is sort of new information to me, you can start to tier your risk factors, I guess. Cooking things and cooking things well will neutralize more plant toxins. Of course, it lowers the nutritional value when you cook anything. That's why these raw food diets have been popular over time, where people contend that they're getting the most nutritious sources because they didn't cook their kale. But that's, again, a very high risk situation. And so my smoothie, to finish the point here, I would drink it and then my stomach would pop out for 4 hours every single day. And it would be kind of sore to touch and be sticking out. Then it would finally correct and I'd be okay. And then I finally had that awakening, like, this can't be healthy, even though it's supposed to be super healthy. And there's all kinds of scientific papers showing how healthy the raw kale is and all that. And that was a nice, kind of transition to be a little more sensible with these, extreme efforts to be healthy.
Right. But it doesn't affect everyone the same way.
Right. And so if you have the genetic makeup or whatever your good fortune is, you have an intact gut lining is another big one. So if you have some leaky gut symptoms that have developed over a lifetime, you're going to find you're allergic to 27 different foods from your food test, and you got to watch out for this, and you got to watch out for that. And that could be attributed upstream to having a gut that's inflamed and dysfunctional and allowing in unwanted agents into the bloodstream to prompt allergic reactions. So once you get super healthy and heal your gut, heal your inflammation, including all your other lifestyle habits that promote inflammatory balance, then you might be more resilient with your diet. Like your example, I think you can go have your cheesecake and ice cream because you have good gut function and a basic level of general health. Same with skipping a night of sleep. I don't know how you can do that, but you seem to do it just fine.
Well, I've never skipped a night of sleep. I may just get 4 hours the day before an early morning flight because I'm packing.
That would put me out for the entire vacation, probably. So again, having that baseline health foundation will help you navigate whatever's coming down your pipe with your diet. And with this rise of the animal-based movement, a lot of people are seeing good benefits from, you know, toning down that intake of the plant superstar foods, or preparing them properly, or picking and choosing the stuff that's more agreeable to them. Now, the other part, which is interesting to me, I wouldn't say I was a huge sufferer. I did notice from those smoothies, because that was an extreme dose of natural toxins. And then, you know, my bloating and digestive problems coming when I was making those massive red cabbage stir fries. It wasn't great, but I wasn't in the hospital, is what I'm saying.
No, you weren't in the hospital, but you were standing upside down on your head in the evenings just to kind of help your...
It was no joke. The other part that was really, an eye-opener to me was that, in fact, if you were to look at the nutrient quality of these wonderful plant foods that we've been convinced our whole life are should be the centerpiece of the diet, you know, what's healthier than a kale smoothie in the morning, a salad for lunch,
spinach,
and stir fry for
full
dinner.
Of iron. How's that?
Right. All those great attributes that we've been convinced forever. In fact, the true nutrient superstars of the planet are from the animal kingdom, not the plant kingdom. And again, that's pretty disputable now. I could get a guest on here that would say, well, no, there's nothing like, a kale for the sulforaphane in broccoli is off the charts and so forth and all that. But objectively speaking, if you were to get a micronutrient analysis of various foods and you put a 4-ounce slice of liver up there with a stalk of broccoli or a kale smoothie or a giant salad with all kinds of whatever colorful plants and nutrients on there, there's no comparison. The liver blows away any plant food, as well as the other pasture-raised eggs, the grass-fed beef, the oily cold water fish. That's where humans have obtained the majority of their nutrition for 2.5 million years. It's not from the kale smoothies. So the people that have difficult time embracing that, a lot of this has been a wonderful marketing push, especially in recent years, for the plant-based community being more sustainable, more nutritious, and staying away from all those killers like red meat and eggs that are clogging your arteries. That's been unfortunate because it's just not grounded in good science, and it's a lot of unwinding and deprogramming, even today in traditional educational paths or in the physician world, where I take a special exception because your MD has not necessarily obtained any training whatsoever in nutrition.
Maybe one class.
Yeah. Dr. Joy Kong, the stem cell doctor, she said she had like one, not a semester class, but one day of class where they talked about nutrition at UCLA Medical School.
Wow.
So that's not to criticize anything about the medical community, because they're there to treat and care for disease and illness. And we need those people when my appendix needs to come out. I'm super happy to go see the surgeon and all the other reasons that we go see the doctor. They're not there to be health and wellness nutrition counselors. But the problem occurs is when they ascend to that role somehow and believe themselves to be the authority on all matters of healthy living and dispense dietary advice, that's backed by U.S. government dogma that we've had for decades, where we want you to cut back on your eggs because your cholesterol is too high. And we can break that down at every level where, for example, the Framingham study, the longest and largest study, it's called epidemiological study, like your daughter's course of master study, but that means a study of lifestyle on health conditions. It's been going for something like 80 years, and they've concluded there's no correlation between dietary cholesterol intake and blood cholesterol levels. So if you cut back on your dietary cholesterol, your body will just make more because it's an important component for all manner of hormonal functions and making sex hormones and all these important things. And so same with the red meat causes cancer headline that's been pounded into our heads for decades. It's just not associated with anything that could be called respected science.
What about organ meat and cholesterol level or cancer causing? What's the science there? Because, you know,
I mean, the problem with a lot of the scientific conclusions that the government has been touted as policy for the last many decades is that all this research comes in the crucible of unhealthy modern lifestyle habits. So if you have a high processed foods diet that also happens to be high in red meat, you are going to cause all kinds of trouble for those eggs and those steaks that get washed down with 7-Up and ice cream and so forth. So if you have this inflammatory diet that's high carbohydrate, high in the refined industrial seed oils, you're going to develop these conditions like metabolic syndrome, and then have a much more likelihood of accumulating plaque on your arteries and having a heart attack. And in fact, cholesterol is part of that story. But as some people like to use this analogy, you hear it a lot, like there's firefighters at the fire, but it doesn't mean the firefighter started the fire. So there's cholesterol involved in your heart attack, the same stuff that came in the egg, but to make those associations that it was that high egg intake that caused too much cholesterol in your body to start collecting in your arteries is 50 years old flawed science.
Okay. Going back to...
So the organ meats you asked about too.
Yeah, organ meats. So is that high... Are they high cholesterol?
Yeah,
I
sure.
I grew up eating organ meats. You know, tripe and buche and, you know,
so traditional Latin
liver.
American cuisine.
Grew up eating liver.
And traditional cuisine for anywhere around the planet has all these amazing, fantastic attributes that have been shoved aside only in the last 30, 40, 50 years. There's a great book called Fast Food Nation by Eric Schlosser. It was written in like 1998, and he talks about how the rise of fast food culture destroyed the fabric of American society, which was the family home-cooked meal of eating, preparing and eating nutritious foods together. And now instead, people could do more work, make more money, get food more conveniently, and show the love to their family by going through the drive-thru and handing them some hot fries, rather than everyone having to slave over peeling the potatoes at home and doing all these things that represented a lot of family togetherness.
No, they're showing their love for the family because they're busy taking their kids to soccer practice, you know, whatever it is, sporting events after work, because now both mother and father have to work, right, to survive in this world and buy a house. And they also want to make sure their kids do all these other activities. So you're kind of stuck. I'm just saying, you know.
Oh, you're observing the trend, the change of culture and the progress, quote unquote, progress of society where, the kids are better at soccer today than they were 50 years ago, I'm sure, because of all the coaching and the videoing. And the standard of living is higher. Perhaps you could say we're taking whatever it is, living in bigger houses, taking better vacations, the classic American dream story. But we've discarded some amazing culinary traditions that served our ancestors all the way up to your mother's time and so forth. And so this bringing back the traditional cuisine, that should be highly embraceable by almost anyone who has a memory or a grandmother hanging around that can, you know, reference back. You know, my mom talks about how liver and onions was her favorite thing growing up as a kid, but we were never served that because we had more McDonald's available. And so kind of taking a few backward steps from this massive accelerated progress of modern times and returning to some of these ancestral traditions, like taking a walk and walking more in general rather than driving everywhere, and toning down that obsessive consumption of screen entertainment in favor of, let's say, playing card games or doing art or doing some family togetherness where you're actually communicating rather than everyone interfacing with the screen. And then when it comes to food, like appreciating that local movement, which is great, that's come about now. And, you know, people are trying to source local. A lot of times that gets unfortunately interwoven with like a plant base and staying away from the local animal products. But all in all that stuff is good. And, you know, we're compelled to, I think, wake up to these big picture ideas that you got to stay away from that processed food because it's going to kill you. And we've all been touched. Every single family has been touched and every individual has been touched either personally or in, you know, with loved ones with cancer, heart disease, and the major killers of modern times, which are, you know, largely preventable and unnecessary. That's who said it? Maybe it was McGuff, like 97 or 99% of all cancers are lifestyle related and 1% are genetic. You know, some young people are born with a cancer and they're in children's hospital from ages of zero or at age four or whatever. And then the other 99 are the stuff we put in our face the rest of our decades.
Interesting.
Okay, maybe we should try to summarize the bouncing around of the important points. So I think we talked about the first step, the first gateway for anybody, whatever level of enthusiasm they have, is to eliminate the processed foods.
Right.
And then, arguably, but a very strong argument, to hearken that ancestral tradition and understand the example of evolutionary anthropology where we ate a certain way for 2.5 million years. And now we're trying to be convinced otherwise by looking at a food pyramid that was put out by what has now been exposed as disastrously flawed and manipulated science and propaganda from food lobbyists and so forth, putting that bottom base of the pyramid and showing things like, you know, non-fat milk and all kinds of stuff like that. So if we can kind of back up a bit and look to our ancestral example and stick to those foods that come from the earth that are minimally processed and sustainably sourced now, we talked about that too. So if you are going to go embrace red meat and eggs and fish, especially fish with all the concerns about pollution and all that, you're making good choices with the most nutritious foods on the planet. You can go download the Carnivore Scores food rankings chart that is present on our refrigerator at bradkearns.com, and that will show you how to prioritize the most nutritious foods. So we talked about that and getting more movement in. As far as, we didn't talk about fitness and exercise and all that stuff, but if we want to get quick there, a lot of experts are now contending that just moving more is more important and more beneficial to health than hitting this hardcore devoted exercise regimen where you're getting yourself to the gym at 6 a.m. several days a week and you're working out for an hour and then the rest of your life is on the subway, in the office, or on the couch. Right. Just moving around more is a better win than getting your points
right
at the gym.
I mean, you can go to the gym. Like, I like to go and take classes, and these classes kind of do an all over. You do a little bit of cardio work, not heavy, some weight work. It's all about just doing, you know, some, what do you guys call it? Weight resistance.
Sure. Yeah.
Movements and stuff, but you don't have to be lifting 50 pound weights or whatever, you know, it's just getting out there, moving, I, you know, on the daily, if you can, I think, because that's what we were doing back in the day, right? Walking wherever we were going and lifting heavy things. What is it that you guys say all the time?
Well, you made a good point there, because there is a danger of getting too extreme with our fitness pursuits today. That's a small amount of the population, but it's definitely out there where people are pushing too hard, thinking that the path to fitness is struggling and
right
suffering. So if you can work within yourself and right just go and lift some things and they're not that heavy
right
or whatever you
oh,
prefer
go for
to
a
do
long walk, but at a brisk pace.
Right.
I find myself after an hour of walking briskly, hey, I feel like I had a good workout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's all you need to do.
It's, I think there's a lot of benefits to doing things that are super brief and also explosive and high intensity. So we need to challenge ourselves in order to age gracefully. Otherwise, we're just going to get a little slower and a little less balanced and a little less functional
right
with the passing of time. And so that's the whole primal blueprint fitness template, was to move around a lot, put your body under resistance load, lift some heavy things or light things in your example.
Right, light things. A lot of light, you know, light
yeah
things, but repetitive.
Yeah. And then finally do something something explosive. And so that could mean a set of kettlebell swings where you can only do it for 10 or 15 seconds because it's too difficult and you got to stop. Or sprinting on the bike.
Yeah.
We have the Carol bike, which is a wonderful technology because the whole workout's only 8 minutes and it includes 2 20-second sprints. And if you go all out, even for a short time like that, you get tremendous fitness benefits in a different way than taking that hour walk. Right. They're both super important.
Well, that's one workout. I like the 15-minute workout.
Yeah, it's
that
just
has like
short and
20
challenging
sprints.
Yeah, that's the main point. And then finally, we talked about a little bit of circadian rhythm in terms of eating and as well as just living in that way where we want to tone things down after dark because that's when our genes expect us to wind down and start making the sleepiness hormones and start, you know, just turning the brain down and getting a good night's sleep. And so the way to do that is to minimize your technology, your stimulation, and your light sources in the home in the hours before bed. And that one's pretty difficult with all the stuff we're dealing with in modern times. You're staying up late packing. You need the light bright so you can see the right clothes to bring. And I think, interestingly, for both of us, like, we have no problem falling asleep, even if we've been watching a show right before it goes, you know, right before bedtime. I'm tired. I need to go to bed. It can be right after a show. I don't need this perfect wind down where I'm meditating for the final 30 minutes. So that's good. But a lot of people struggle with sleep. And then we're talking about a whole different story.
Right. No, I know you, when it's 10 o'clock, all of a sudden, I know your whole body. I could see your whole body just shuts down. I mean, you're done.
I feel drugged when it's 10 o'clock. I really do. I'm like, I can't even talk. My speech pattern goes off. Yeah. Which is a nice gift. And it starts first thing in the morning. Setting your circadian rhythm starts first thing in the morning by exposing yourself to direct light and getting those hormones switched on, which will then, however many hours later, start to recalibrate because you have aligned yourself with the rising and setting of the sun. Wow, did we cover a ton on this show? If it was a flight, it would have already landed. They'd be kicking us off southwest.
Wasn't very organized, but...
That's all right. That's why we have Mia Moore on the show. Go with the flow. Thanks for listening, everybody. Send us some comments, maybe some follow-up questions.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, ladies. You may have heard me talk about Gaines Wave treatment for improving male penile vascular health and sexual function, and maybe you thought, hey, what about my needs? Well, Gaines Wave has got you covered with a revolutionary new treatment protocol called Gaines Wave for Her. As with the male Gaines Wave treatment, a skilled practitioner uses a handheld device to send low-intensity shock waves into your vaginal area to stimulate a healing response, promote increased blood circulation, and the growth of new blood vessels after a series of 6 to 12 very brief treatments, which are painless but extremely effective. You get real results with Gaines Wave reporting an 80% success rate. Some benefits. You will revitalize your intimate relationships with heightened sensation and arousal and enhanced pleasure and satisfaction. Don't contemplate invasive procedures or uncomfortable medical treatments. Regain confidence and reclaim your sexuality with Gaines Wave for Her. You visit the website gainswave.com, GAINSWAVE.com/Brad, to find a practitioner in your area. You complete a series of treatments, and the beneficial effects will last for a long time, especially if you eat and exercise well to promote overall vascular health. It's a tune-up for your equipment, so please visit gainswave.com/Brad to find a practitioner in your area and take advantage of my special promo that you'll mention when you find your local practitioner. Buy 6 treatments and get one free. Thank you for listening to the show. I love sharing the experience with you and greatly appreciate your support. Please email podcast@bradventures.com with feedback, suggestions, and questions for the Q&A shows. Subscribe to our email list at bradkearns.com for a weekly blast about the published episodes and a wonderful bi-monthly newsletter edition with informative articles and practical tips for all aspects of healthy living. You can also download several awesome free ebooks when you subscribe to the email list. And if you could go to the trouble to leave a 5 or 5-star review with Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to the shows. That would be super incredibly awesome. It helps raise the profile of the BRAD podcast and attract new listeners. And did you know that you can share a show with a friend or loved one by just hitting a few buttons in your player and firing off a text message? My awesome podcast player called Overcast allows you to actually record a soundbite excerpt from the episode you're listening to and fire it off with a quick text message. Thank you so much for spreading the word. And remember, be rad.